Bine v-am găsit la un nou episod din Upcult Radio, de data asta cu un invitat pe care l-ați mai văzut, așa că nu o să mai dau multe detalii și... Ska, glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, welcome back, that's a better phrasing. First things first, I was actually thinking, because you're wearing something else before that, and I was like, I'm in a t-shirt and I'm gonna out-angle you, and then you took my t-shirt, and if anybody is thinking like, oh, he looks so jacked, it's because of the t-shirt, not anything else.
Definitely, yeah. I had a complete different outfit and then spilled my coffee. Because everything is worth it for coffee.
Yeah.
And there we are. You saved the day, by the way.
Good to have more t-shirts. But you could have gone with the Joker t-shirt, but...
Yeah, it's a bit too much.
But I look how they've judged you a bit. Okay, so basically the plan for us is to make you somewhat of a co-host here, because as we announced in the first episode, you're going to be a recurrent person that comes to the podcast. So it's going to be more as a friends and family. We're going to answer a lot of questions, and it's not going to be a fixed topic. Or maybe it's going to be like, we got the freedom to do whatever we want when
exactly,
we
yeah.
meet. So probably I'd like to start with the fact that one of our biggest projects for this year is the seminars that we are gonna do together. And for you, it's nutrition, because you're the guru in that direction, probably. Not probably, but for sure. And I got a simple question, like, why is nutrition important to everybody? Because, like, if we are gonna explain it to dolphins, like, why is it important?
I mean... My instinct is to ask why it's not important.
Okay.
And it's very hard to find a reason why it's not important. You know, whether you're going to the gym.
Okay, good point of view. Yeah. I'm trying to think of
reasons. Yeah, but... I mean, once you give me an answer why it's not important, then by extension, I don't have to answer my question. But anyways, whether you want to fuel yourself for a workout, whether you want to be healthy... Whether you have a certain body composition you're going after, you name it. You cannot just not tackle nutrition, you know. Like, at a certain point, you will have to deal with it in a way, you know. So I would say it's so important that it's very hard to find a reason why it's not important. Initially, I started to run away from it. Like, I started training. I was an athlete. Training was my main focus. But at a certain point, you hit a stage in which, oh, okay, I need to address this thing. And then once you start exposing yourself to it, you realize how important it is. So, yeah.
Okay, that's actually a very good answer. Not that I wouldn't have expected it, but that's like, I was really actually trying to find reasons not to give nutrition importance. And it's a very smart way to answer stuff. Okay, also, what do you think about the fact that we actually go a very far... I actually tried to give you an... It's going to be... I tried to give you another question and I just blacked out for a second.
Reset, take your time.
Yeah. Nutrition-wise. You know the cliché, 70% nutrition, 40% physical activity. Do you agree with that? Do you see any logic in that? Like, what's your perspective?
I understand the need of people to provide metrics for things. This has to be 100, this has to be 20. What's the rationale behind it? I don't understand that. You know me very well. I'm a first principle individual. Okay, let's go to the root of the decision. How did we come up with 50%? How did we come up with 100%? Most people cannot give you an answer. Just because on a good day they decided... People that tend to like more training would say training is 80, and then they have to give some credit to nutrition because, of course, you have to. And people that are more nutrition-oriented will give more importance to nutrition. I like to think of them as a relationship, okay? Imagine our friendship or us co-hosting this thing. Imagine if I'm constantly trying to gauge, you're giving 20%, you're giving 100%. Both of us are very important. If I slack in this podcast or you do, the whole thing will just go off, you know. So both of them are equally important. Both of them are 100%. However, when one is dialed in and the other one is not, then the one that is getting the less intention gets the most importance. So if you're training, programming, everything is fine, but you're not doing what you're supposed to do in terms of nutrition, then I would say it's more important to dial in the nutrition than to dial in the training even further, because you're getting more out of fixing that aspect. If nutrition is doing very well, but your training is slacking, then I would give more importance to training. So who's the person in front of me? What do they know? What do they want? Then I gauge that importance based on the situation.
Basically, it's a very volatile thing to manipulate. And it's also interesting in the fact that usually depending on the people that you work with, because for example, let's say somebody comes in for the first time, at least my mind works like this. Okay, let's see what his lifestyle or her lifestyle is. Let's see where he or she struggles. And probably if her food maybe is somewhat dialed in, like she has 3 meals per day, she has some protein here and there. As you said, we don't need to address it so much. Like just, okay, eat some more Greek yogurt or eat some more chicken there. But then if she really, 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 really hates the gym, okay, let's focus on this and make it as enjoyable, as efficient, as good for you of an experience as possible. And we can actually get somewhere.
Yeah.
And you can't say that that's the formula for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And you definitely, if we are talking about general public clients and so on, they will get most out of their results dealing with their nutrition, because training will just get you somewhere. It's very good to be active, to build muscle mass and so on. But you need the fuel, you need the micronutrients, you need the protein distribution, you need all of those. An athlete will need a lot of calories, regardless. You see, like the American football, it doesn't matter what they eat, their biggest problem is getting enough calories.
Yeah.
A marathon runner will be doing, I don't know, a race for a couple of hours, then their fuel must be a little bit different. So,
yeah, you need to adjust. You need to adjust
constantly. Because imagine a car with all the amazing engineers, electronics and traction and whatever. Without fuel, what do? The car will not want to start.
And I'd say that's the problem for a lot of people and a lot of high achievers, mm-hmm. in the way that at least that's the clientele that I tend to go towards, and they go to me basically. And usually they are people that they want to do a lot of stuff. They do a lot of stuff, and then they just tell me about how, okay, I don't have any more energy. And I'm like, okay, what did you eat that day? And like a cracker with some vegetables and like a piece of fish. And I'm like, bro.
Yeah.
You need to start eating. Even though your goal is to lose weight, you need to start eating, because you can't go like that and expect your body to actually function for the day.
Yep.
And a very good example was the fact that was the only time that I actually puked in a gym. If you remember, we were training in Pantelimon, and I didn't eat well. I ate breakfast, but we were training around 4 or 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way there, I took a Red Bull and I ate a Kinder Bueno. And it's that ironic situation in which you eat too less and too close to the workout. And we maxed out the hex squat. And then I was like, for 5 minutes, you went with me for the gym. Like, okay, let's walk a bit.
But yeah.
it wasn't the case.
And you handled it pretty well. I will give you that.
Yeah, because
you just kept your composure.
We did SSB after that, because I puked and then we continued the workout.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah. I mean, that day, I kind of, my respect for you grew significantly.
Thank you. Do you miss the old days? Like, and by the old days, because the people don't actually know, but we go a long way back. And for us, the first interactions and the way that we'd hang out was weekends, working out together. And that was like 2 to 3 hours and then eating something, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Way simpler times. But it still seems like it was like yesterday.
Yeah, it is. It is. The thing is, we can always get those days back. I won't say my concern, but my initial thought was, imagine if the gym wasn't the common place in which we meet, talk, exchange things. Could we still have a relationship?
Yeah.
Now we have the proof that we can.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like once you get that thing created, it's way more transcends the place, the gym, the training, or whatever we do every day. You can actually decently go out, have a coffee, eat something without even talking about it at all. So I would say I'm proud of that, because the gym part can always exist.
And that's probably one of the common things that you'd see with most people that work in the fitness industry, like, but they do it for a long time and not just like part-time. Okay, it's still fun to go and work out together and lift some weights and do all that kind of stuff, but at least not talk about the training. Okay, we're gonna train, but we're not gonna talk about it. Like, how many percentages are you lifting? Like, nobody cares. Just lift the weight. Let's go.
You know what? This aspect translates even in coaching or everyday practice. I think once you have mastered the fundamentals in your field, you get way more reward and advantages by learning around your field. Outside of it, just close enough, but be a well-rounded individual, because at a certain point, people stop asking you about their macros and their sets and reps. You start having different conversations. They ask you about your opinion. What do you think of X? What do you think about what's going on here? And if you're not well-formed individual, they kind of, you lose essence, you know. And that's very important for you to know how to talk to people, because you're talking to a software engineer. If you read something or you encounter a topic similar, you can get the point across using their own language.
Yeah, that's the main thing, I'd say. Like, explaining stuff to people in their way. I'm somehow joking about it usually, but like when I'm talking to my clients that work in IT, I'm like, bro, you take the line, you know, and I'm just giving them, because usually they give me some examples before that, and then I'm trying to include them when I explain them back.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Use like ones and zeros and, you know, like analogies. Yeah. The basics. It works a lot. I actually have a question for you in terms of working with people and so on. I recognize a trend, the trend in society nowadays. People are more individualistic. So the individual, less groups, less communities, the person is the focus. But you managed to create some sort of a community around you and what you do. How hard was it to accomplish it? And what are the benefits of such thing? Or did you face any resistance because people are trying to go towards a different path?
So let's take it in parts. First, how hard was it? And the second one was how hard was making the community? And the second question was?
The benefits.
The benefits, okay. Yeah. Just remember the benefits because I will forget it. How hard was it? Well, I can't really say, because, for example, on the first part, I started doing that, like, I don't know, like 3 years ago. And my goal was just to, okay, let's get people in training. And then I just try to be like a decent human being and talk to them and like, okay, what's your kid doing? And like literally just getting interested in the person, because if you're going to spend time together, let's do that. And after that, I don't know if it was like the effect of doing things in a certain way, because it wasn't orchestrated. For example, when I switched to my own gym, here I already had a pattern that I was somehow following, because I saw that it gave dividends back. But in the first phase, when I just started out, it was like, okay, I'm just doing this because it feels right or good. And then it was like, okay, let's go out for coffee or something, or let's go eat something. And it was enjoyable, and we kept repeating it, basically. And in the same fashion, we went even clubbing once, although I didn't want to.
Yeah.
They insisted. I was like, okay, I'm going to sacrifice myself. Let's go.
Okay.
And it wasn't hard. I think it's not hard. You just need to genuinely care about the people that are around you. And if you do that, you'll attract more people that also care about you. And you're just vice versa interested in one another, basically. Mm-hmm. So as long as you actually care about what you do, it should come somewhat naturally.
Okay.
Even though, you know me, I'm not a, hey, let's be friends kind of guy.
Have you noticed or encountered a person that is a little bit more distant, reserved, what we call now introverted by nature, trying to include them in a group? And how was the whole experience?
Usually it's, I'm not pushing anybody to do anything. Okay. And I'm always like, hey, Alina, this is Ioana. Hey, Ioana, this is Alina. Mm-hmm. If somebody doesn't like each other by any reason, if they just don't seem like they vibe, I'm going to be like, okay, nobody needs to be friends. Mm-hmm. We're just coexisting.
Yeah.
I actually got used to the idea that the community part that I provide to the people is optional. Mm-hmm. You can use it, but you cannot use it. You can okay. also use just the workouts and everything else. And that's perfectly fine. Like, some people just have enough, probably, community and yeah. just stuff to do, yeah. and they don't want to enter another one. So I'm perfectly fine with that.
So you'd say it's never imposed. You just...
No.
You show the option to the individual. If they are into it and they like it, then it's welcome. Otherwise, they can still exist the way they want. Okay.
Yeah, and I get it. Like, for example, most events that we do at the gym or even previously, they're in weekends. Mm-hmm. And let's say that it's a family of two parents or yeah. a kid. Usually, they both work. They need, like, at least some time in the weekend together. They'll go somewhere with the kid. Maybe because apparently that's what grown-ups have, like some kind yeah. of event every weekend. And if that's somehow coinciding every time with what I organize, I'm like, I'm sorry, but it yeah. is what it is. Like, yeah. Yeah. It's not a problem. So I'm just, as long as people just feel good in the community that's already created and nobody feels like pushed to do stuff or it's like, obligatory, you need to come. No, like, it's, you know, everybody feels good. That's important. Everybody can, like, help each other if somebody needs something, and that's the main idea.
Okay. And let's say if there is a person now listening, they're not into a community, they entertain the idea, they see the appeal in it, but they're hesitating, right? They don't know if it's this thing is for me or not. Well, what would you tell such an individual?
It probably starts from yourself, in the idea that if you are not okay with yourself as a person, in the idea that if you can't provide something to somebody else, then you probably won't be of too much use in a community. Like, let's say, you know, the usual, like, people usually go to networking events, not that I do that or that I'm very really used to the environment, but, and they're like, okay, let's shake everybody's hand and, like, let's meet people. And from what I understood until this point, it's more of a, okay, if you actually want to network and meet people, it's, let me provide you value, help mm-hmm. for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be somehow not... It's not going to be mandatory, but you're going to feel good helping back, because that's what usually people and humans do. And that's how bonds are created. And then if I do that with you, I do that with somebody else, you do that with that somebody else, and something creates, basically.
Yeah.
So that's the number one thing, like being actually able to create some value for somebody. And that could be something as simple as, okay, if I go to a gym and work out, just not being a dick to everybody around or something like that. That could be enough. Like, and I'm sure that's enough. Like,
it's as simple as that. Yeah.
And you could already get along with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Okay. That was the part in which Ska co-hosted for everybody that didn't know what was happening. Also, like, about, because we went about going into coffee shops and stuff like that. If you remember, the first time that I talked to you about opening a gym, we were at Boiler, but the one from Victoria. And I told you about the first variant in the location that we're still not going to talk about, but where we went before,
yeah,
like half an hour ago.
Yeah.
And we weren't even there. And how was your actual, like, not response, but what did you think? Like, were you, is that possible? Is that not possible? Like, did you really believe in the fact that, because we were talking about, like, opening a gym and having actually a space for a long time. What is your...
I don't want to sound like a hype man, you know, it's like I've always seen it coming or whatever, but sometimes you meet people, you can see a sparkle, right? Like, somebody is up to something, you know, and they are persistent enough to make it happen. Whether you know if it will work or not, you know they will try it, or they would do it. So that I got, you know. Of course, you cannot predict if something would work or not, obviously. But obviously, you managed to make it work. And now we will somehow endeavor into the actual place. And, like, you know, the first version of the thing you want. You know, when you see, let's say, a house for the first time, you're like, I want that house or that car. I want that car. So, yeah, I think... this second location will solidify the whole concept. By asking even the people that experienced the first one, I don't think anyone regrets it. It helped people involved. It helped you getting involved. It helped me getting involved by watching the whole thing happening. So I'd say I'm a believer.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Appreciate it. And yeah, it's. I was just thinking because it's funny how we first went to Boiler, then that happened, and then the second time we actually went to the one in at Universiteti there with Raluca. And there, but I think I already, because it was pretty, the second time it was already like quite secured, the whole thing. And I was like, straight through the message, Ska, we need to meet. I have some stuff to...
You said family meeting.
I said family meeting?
Yes.
Okay. That rang a bell, like it was...
Yeah.
Okay. That was fun. Also nutrition related, because we're going to bounce back and on all directions. Yeah. Not that you have to remember. The whole thing with our first seminar was blood work. And again, the whole thing was for me to actually get blood work.
Yeah.
And I actually did. And as superficial as possible, I actually neglected everything that could have been not neglected. And I went and I focused on my testosterone. Just because I wanted
to. Every man should do, I guess.
Yeah. And from a more serious perspective, like if we're talking about T levels, do you think that people would actually, and men especially, would benefit from a more, but here I'm talking about like a very clinical, scientific approach, like getting them supplemented when we're talking about like 40 years old, and in the fact that their quality of life is actually declining, and I can see it just at people around me that they probably could really use some help from the inside, so to say, like something that would pop them up a bit in all directions.
Well, if you're talking age, testosterone, whatever, it's a very long history, okay? I think we wouldn't be talking about this if it wasn't initially for two things, I would say. Medical setup, because chemists figure out this thing. Testosterone was discovered and separated long, long time ago. We even have history probably of it being used during world wars and to, you know, support what the war requires from soldiers, aggression, sheer physicality, and so on and so forth. And then you have sports. I would say sports put testosterone and all these things on the map, you know. And like track and field, Olympics, American football, baseball, looking like you're a cheater, so on and so forth. And then the truth lies in the middle, okay? I think people shouldn't jump into such thing too early, too fast, because we have documented data. If some individuals, let's say, they're not eating properly, they're not exercising, they have more than enough body fat, and then they jump straight on testosterone, that's not a good idea. They might see some changes, but the side effects would be very great. There are a lot of steps and things people should do prior to checking such things. Another fascinating thing I actually discovered a while ago, you could take people and have them producing zero testosterone and still put on muscle mass.
Okay.
So it's not the main prerequisite for muscle mass or performance. Can it predict your quality of life, your health long term? Yes, but you don't need that much, you know. So total testosterone means something, free testosterone means other things, but then the body works as an ecosystem. You have estrogen on the other side, you have cortisol on the other side, you have inflammation here and there. So it's, you never take one marker and base a person's health or what they should do based on one thing, testosterone is the, it's not. I would say estrogen can be a better predictor actually for men because it's cardioprotective.
Okay.
We somehow know that females tend to live longer. It's because of their estrogen. It's cardioprotective. Men tend to have more heart attacks than females at an early age. So what do you want? What do you need? That's it's more complicated. So that's really something that should be taken. And this is not my field. I don't prescribe these things. I cannot do it. It's a medical thing. I want to be very careful with my statements and the advices I'm giving. So people should be working with doctors, professionals to do such thing. That's a personal decision that you take in concordance with your medical professional. So, but you can check your glucose markers. You can check your VO2 max for your health, you know, which is an exercise-based thing. Muscle mass. And then if you suffer from certain symptoms, because hypogonadism exists, which is low testosterone, and it's bad for men, you know. If your doctor identifies the case, then of course. If it doesn't, or if your doctor doesn't identify low testosterone, then you don't need to. There are other things that you can do, exercise, nutrition, certain vitamins and minerals that can do the job for you, you know.
Okay, so first of all, we want to make sure that everything is in check. And if everything is in check, you can go to the cherry on the top, basically.
Yeah, I would say for men, I think, the last thing they should look at is hormones.
Okay.
I know it's counterintuitive.
And the first things that they should look at, like everything that you've already mentioned.
Red blood cells, glucose, lipid profile, liver, kidneys. Your organs, that's the first thing you should look at. Because if those don't work properly, you might die. You can take your prostates away. You can take another thing away and you can still survive. You know, your liver, okay, it can generate. If you mess up your kidneys, your life is just a nightmare from there. So it's just a hierarchy of importance. You can survive just fine with very low testosterone. You can live, you know. But if you mess up other things that are very important, then dialysis, ask any person that did dialysis and you will hear the real truth. You know, that's excessive drug use, whether antibiotics, whether it's, I don't know, birth control pills, all these things that can damage your liver and so on and so forth. Alcohol.
Yeah, that's actually quite an important thing. The fact that most people, and if you look at most gym goers, even the archetypical like big guy or anything like that, they actually really ignore, and maybe that's something that I also did previously, the health side, in which like, okay, maybe you shouldn't drink as much. Maybe you should sleep a bit more. Maybe you should check your nutrition a bit more and like just do the regular blood work. Because it's easy to fall in that category that I'm healthy because I go to the gym and do bicep curls.
Yeah.
But that's not enough, apparently.
Yeah.
And this is not doctor advice.
Exactly, yeah. But we should mention that all the time.
Yeah. But that's a good rule of thumb that you can...
Yeah. Sometimes I just like to... somehow break myths, because our brains are very lazy, including me, including you, everyone. We need, okay, I need to know, is that the answer for everything? Is that the answer for everything? It's not the answer for everything, you know? It's more complicated. Sometimes when you take that thing that people worship, because for a man, you ask them about anything, he's like, tell me about my testosterone. Is it okay? Yes. Okay, that's fine. I don't care about the rest, you know. But once I take that idea and kind of break it, that's not actually the most important thing for you. Maybe you should check something else.
But what's interesting is that the fact that we got like this polarization in which, okay, we got the 5%, at least in Romania, the gym goers and maybe the people that are more, how do you call it? They're just more in the environment where you can hear about it and they're like, okay, testosterone, testosterone. And then you got the other people, which they, if I don't know, if their elbow hurts, it's like, oh my God, we need to cut it or something. And it's very interesting how somebody puts a lot of emphasis on it and the others don't even think about it. And probably should come somewhere like in the middle where we just relax a bit, but also think about it a bit more.
Yeah.
And just take it in consideration, because for somebody that is an actual vegetable, they could probably get some help out of moving more, eating a bit more protein, and just getting those levels a bit higher, because you don't need to do a lot to elevate them if they're down.
Yeah. I'm really glad for people that are doing things wrong. I know it sounds weird, but...
Because they got a lot of room for growth, or...
Well, you can see it that way, but eventually we'll just subscribe to this part of the ideology, and then the other one just bounce back, and then you will find the truth in the middle. But without them existing, you will never know. You know, so I'm really, really glad for the people that do things wrong. Hopefully they will revise them, evolve, change their minds. Actually, now I have a question for you, since we are talking about this. Have you changed your mind on anything related
to... That's what I...
Yeah?
Wrote that's here pretty for cool. You. Okay, okay.
I'm not prepared. You are. So yeah, have you changed your mind over anything lately? Maybe the last year or two, or even the last couple of months?
The biggest realization that I had probably was, you know, the... And I'm talking about from a more professional standpoint here. Okay. You know, as PTs, you think like, oh my God, where do you find clients? Or like, it's really hard to do that. And then if you're thinking it through the perspective that most people that come in a gym, they don't stick to the gym because they don't know what to do and they get zero results. And that's probably 85% of the people that just come to the gym, not everybody else. And they're like, everybody actually that's in a gym is somebody that you can work with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it seems really simple, you know, because, okay, you're a PT and you stay in the gym. And like, yeah, of course, everybody is workable with. But you're in that spot and you're actually like, can I approach that guy or that guy? You feel intimidated. That one has got more muscle.
Mm-hmm.
That girl is prettier, like all that kind of stuff. And you're like, maybe not. And you got doubts. But after that, like, especially since owning a gym and like a more PT-oriented one, I'm like, everybody's actually a person that you could work with. You just need to communicate on their language and to understand what they need from you, basically.
Yeah.
I'll probably have more, but this one, that was something that I was thinking of recently.
Okay.
But I'm going to bounce that back to you.
Oof. Okay, so stuff that I changed my mind over. I would say, okay, I think my approach to learning changed a little bit. I used to think you have to be very precise, stick to your field, dig deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And then I realized that, again, circling back to what I said earlier, reading around your field will give you more substance. It's one of those things, like try to have depth, but also width. And especially, there is, I think, a concept called passive versus active learning. Passive is like school. Think about school. You have a curriculum. You have to follow certain steps. 1, 2, 3, and you don't skip anything. I adopted that for a while. It didn't work for me. As of a couple of years ago, I realized just I need to let my brain wander around and follow things that I'm interested in. And it doesn't matter if it's in my field or not. I'll just bounce from, okay, I have dedicated time for me to study certain things because I need to know certain aspects so I can help people and have this conversation, because without it, we cannot have it. And try to let my brain go everywhere, you know. Whatever it finds interest, I just pick it up, try it, read about it, try to dig a little bit there and here. And if I find stronger interest, I'll just follow it a little bit more. And then it leads me to another thing. I will not suppress myself. I'll follow it. And on the surface, it looks like a person that is confused. And I used to think that if you don't have a path, a clear path of learning or following an idea, you're confused. But I realized that that can be very beneficial. Because I can speak for a lot of people probably that their interest changed a lot, very volatile. And it's viewed badly by certain people, but not necessarily. You never know what you can stumble across that can change everything for you. you know, one idea, one book, one seminar, one course that has nothing to do with what you do. Suddenly you feel like everything is coming together. So I would encourage probably people to embrace a little bit more of a passive way of dealing with things or doing them or following them.
That's an interesting perspective, especially because I noticed also on myself the fact that lately I'm still enjoying working and PTing and working one-on-one with people, or not only one-on-one, but I also start enjoying more and more the process of doing stuff around the gym, like for the gym itself, and like just, I don't know, like, okay, let's take pictures for that, and like, let's shoot a video for that, and what else can we do? Okay, let's make a podcast, and maybe if I didn't already buy those microphones back when we tried to do it solo and do those 10 episodes which we just deleted after that, and all this kind of stuff, which you'd say, again, the person is confused, but then stuff builds on top of each other, and it ends up making sense. And that's the most beautiful thing, I'd say. Just following footsteps and taking what you need from each room, so to say.
Cool.
Let's brag a bit. We already talked one-on-one about the new fitness certification that's about to come out, and I became a bit more comfortable with getting back to uni just to get rid of it, you know, like something private.
Okay.
But the main idea is that right now I'm not trying to criticize, although I am, because they don't think it through at all. But the thing is that the move, just for the people to understand, of becoming a PT, I don't know, like a 6-week long process to getting it to 8 months, especially when you get it to 8 months and you learn 2 weekends out of the whole month, which means 2 weekends are free, you can just, maybe I don't see things right, but you can just put it every weekend and make it 4 months and you're done in half the period. I don't know, maybe I don't see the things the right way. But getting quantity in doesn't mean that you'll get quality in the end. And that's my main concern. Not concern, but problem with the whole thing. How do you see the whole process?
I think the whole industry is going through learning and iteration phase, you know. Initially, the barrier to entry was extremely low. You said a weekend course or 2 weeks and then you're good to go. And now they want to extend it even forward or further. I don't think the answer is in between, but I think they need to try it and learn. I don't know if this will give more incentive to people to be part of it or to exit. I'm really curious to see how it works out for both new upcomers and also existing trainers or coaches, you name it. I'm really curious to see how it's going to work. Like, have you spoke with other people and got their take on it? What is the rest of the industry thinks?
I talked to people that, because how to put it in a not arrogant way, like the people that we talk to usually are trainers that are also like somehow on the same path as we. So those people were also amused by it, because they were thinking like, you know, Bogdan, for example, he's also like, he also has like a lot of experience and worked through it, has his own mentorship. And we're talking with Seba and the other guys, you know, like, do you imagine the scenario? We all enter a Zoom call and we all stay in the Zoom call with some guy from the, I don't know, like from the minister, or I have no idea. And what's he's gonna talk to us about? And not in the idea that we know everything, because we definitely don't. But I don't know how you put this in a way that somebody that has so much experience, and I'm not talking about me, is gonna get some value out of it without actually losing his time and money. Because if you don't think this through, you can't say that you're making a service for the industry when the people that are doing it the best are actually brought down by it. That's my only and big problem with it.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, sometimes when people propose a bill or an idea or a solution to an issue, which I think they found a problem and they're trying to fix it, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know what's happening.
But usually they will announce, we have realized there is XYZ issue with this context and we would like to make it better or fix it, or we see a hole in knowledge or we see a hole in practice. So I'm thinking, if you have an experienced trainer or coach, is more knowledge what they need? I don't know. Maybe they are teaching themselves. It's good to put everyone under the same umbrella. It works, you know. Any healthcare, because we consider ourselves in the healthcare industry by extension, they need a governmental body or something to regulate it. You know, you need to be accountable for your actions because you work with people, you're giving them prescriptions because that's what they are, exercise, nutrition, you name it. You need to be held accountable for your action. Okay. You need to protect the coaches and you need to protect clients. If this is the goal, at least the big vision, then I'm for it. You know, if it's just to make money out of a growing industry, then I don't really support this idea, if it makes any sense. Like, okay, we are seeing 1,000 trainer or coaches or whatever getting into this industry. Maybe if we try to create this thing, we'll make more money. Okay, if you do such thing and you invest back, create better courses, maybe,
opportunities.
Exactly, opportunities, more training, hands-on, okay, more experiences, a network, linking people with each other, experienced trainers. Okay, let's see who are the people that are doing good work. It's been doing it for a while. Their clients are satisfied. Let's gather those people. Let's pick their brains. Let's see what worked, what didn't work, so we can make the new generation actually benefit. Let's link them together. Let's create a mentorship program. The trainer will benefit because we all have egos when you teach and you just stand and talk and teach. Everybody it feels good. Help. Yes. Yeah. And the newcomers would like to spend more time with the people that pave the path. So if that's the big picture, I like it. If it's not, then I don't know. I'm trying to give an opinion of something I still don't understand.
I'm going to be a bit more pessimistic in the idea that I tried to use Threads, you know, the platform like Twitter from Instagram. And I don't know, some guy that's had some followers. And the usual PT that talks a lot and has some results and a bit, not famous, but, you know, has more followers. And because the whole platform presumes that you got to talk and stuff, I said that, okay, like, let's talk. And he said that he's so happy that this is going to get applied because no more unworthy PTs are going to be in the industry. And I replied, like, please, very politely, please answer me, how is more quantity in the time applied in the course is going to result in a better quality of a PT? Thank you. We switched some replies, and the end conclusion was that he's not here to argue with me. It's not his idea, it's the state's idea. Like, it's just the fact that he completely avoided what I asked him. I gave him like very good arguments. I was like, bro, look, if you get more quantity, you're not gonna get more quality. He also made some analogies. I also responded with analogies, explained him why his logically don't make sense. Zero response to that. You know, like when I'm talking to you about something and you're just avoiding it.
Yeah.
And most of the time it just goes that direction. I'd say, like, with anybody that you go, because, again, if you go to a 8-week course, is it going to be like we go into deep biomechanics and how does the body work? Or is it another TRX weekend and another kettlebell weekend? And now we're going to do some fly yoga because we got one more weekend and we got to fill in the time with something. So get ready.
Yeah, I've seen, for example, most of my certification are taken abroad, and I've seen the same model kind of being applied here. Not yet, but maybe on the way. Yes. So again, if you are in the healthcare industry or exercise and fitness and wellness, whatever, you are required to have 20 hours of continuing education every 2 years, okay? Hence, the incentive of creating a lot of courses. So initially, you'll go through, I don't know, whether it's a nutrition course, strength and conditioning course, exercise, rehab, you name it, okay? Some solid courses. But then the incentive also give you the ability to create, I won't say nonsense, but now glute specialist, TRX, whatever.
Factory.
Exactly. Factory. So you go really for quantity and you really dilute the quality, you know, and that can be worrisome. Maybe we can capitalize on such thing. Maybe if we can create a solid course, solid seminar that people can really benefit and try to make it accredited. So if you participate, I don't know, let's say we create 3 seminars, 5 seminars, 10 seminars a year with decent quality and good amount of information, that can people participate, get some sort of a certification, whatever, they can show it to this governmental or regulatory body and it counts for hours of education, then it would create good incentive for people to
actually
provide
learn, yeah,
good information, you know. Because you want it to be also decentralized, right? Eventually, most things or the public will like things to be decentralized. They don't want things to be concentrated or held by just one entity, okay? Just this entity that just call us for, I don't know, whatever, they create a course and that's the only way we can get our education. You need to give people freedom to learn where and when they want, or from whom they want. So I hope you can take this thing that is now a gray area, people are a bit confused, they don't know what to do, and maybe we can capitalize on that. Not to somehow, okay, to benefit, obviously, it's good, but incentive gives quality also. You know, it's like, okay, if I can do such thing and provide good information, people can benefit, why not?
Yeah, simply put, if there isn't anything worthy out there, why not create something and actually get the people for their money, time, and energy, yeah, invested, something that's benefiting them.
Yeah.
That's... I still have flashbacks of sitting on a Bosu ball with kettlebells on the Bosu ball, and their trainer would be like putting one more kettlebell on the Bosu ball, and is that hard? And I was like, no, it's not. And I never did that in my life. I'm just like regular training.
No.
Yeah, that's not cool. Not cool. Fun fact, I just realized that actually yesterday or another day ago. The first time that I went to Cluj, they have a guy that's an Olympic gold medalist training there on weightlifting. And I didn't know who he is. And you know how usual, because he's retired, weightlifters, like most of them don't look like bodybuilders or something. Like they look like regular people. And I was like, who's this guy? Why is he here? And then I learned who he is. And now, like literally yesterday, I figured out that when I went home 2 times, and it was in different holidays, probably each time like during Easter and then during Christmas, the gym that I randomly go and pay like one entrance, like this is the rack that I trained at, and then the rack next to, it happened 2 times. A girl that also was doing weightlifting stuff, and she was doing them well, but I don't know, and I don't have the eyes to actually understand, is that well done, or I just don't know anything better and this seems good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like a bit familiar, but I wasn't sure. And then I somehow stumbled on it on Instagram, and she was also some like Olympic medalist stuff at weightlifting. And I was like, okay, like I need to learn a bit more. It was funny for me. Yeah, so, just a funny story. Why did you start sprinting and why not just running, and like what's up with it?
You know, a while ago I was somehow, I won't say too dysfunctional, that I started paying attention to how I walk. Okay, I saw certain patterns in my body that changed due to, you name it, compensation, trying to avoid certain motions, so on and so forth. And then I actually did more sprinting in my athletic life than anything else. I would say I even know how to sprint a little bit better than how to walk, okay, if it makes any sense. Maybe it's the focus. Maybe it's the motion. Maybe
sprinting for the house. Like,
if I was giving the chance, of course, take away how tired you would feel to sprint the whole time. I'll probably sprint my whole life.
Okay.
But I need to rebuild my body. I'm not chasing how I was, but it's good to make progress. It's good to chase other things around just to make things a little bit more exciting, you know. Again, the person never stops learning. And I think there is a trap sometimes in which you stick to the things that you know best. Like, how could you do something you're not as competent as, at least now, when you are this coach or trainer that just go on a podcast and give advices to people, you know? So I'm indirectly practicing humility and directly building my body, if it makes any sense.
Okay. Last time I sprinted, I pulled my hammy. So.
Yeah.
And that was very unexpected because
I went for the curved.
I never actually thought that, you know, like it'll never happen to me. Or
yeah.
But I never associated myself with a person that could pull his hamstring during sprinting, because I did that for a long time and I was like, that's easy. Like,
yeah. And the conversation we had was, yes, you are Marius, but over time, your body is another body now. You know, your weight distribution is different. Some muscles get stronger, some muscles get weaker. You are able to produce much more force now than you were capable before. And you need to account for such thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not that trainers or coaches don't make mistakes. Everybody at the highest level in athletic endeavors, they do prehab, they do injury preventions, which is, there is no such thing as injury prevention, but all you can attempt to do is to put yourself in situations which, if you were to be injured, you get somehow injured safely, if it makes any sense. Maybe yeah. Your recovery would be faster. Maybe you won't get as severe of an injury. Maybe instead of pulling a whole muscle, you just have a partial tear. Nobody, I think, talks about this thing. But even when you get injured, not all injuries are created equal. Yeah. So we all make mistakes. We are all willing to learn. That's like your safety net. Okay. Like I'm trying to learn. I'm teaching people while I'm trying to learn something else, which is something to be proud of.
Also injury related, like, it pisses me more and more off the language and the preparation that most doctors have. And I'm not trying to talk them down, because again, they learn a lot, they have a very important role, but for God's sake, like, if I'm gonna hear one more doctor tell a person that because of his or her sprained ankle she can't go to the gym for 2 weeks, I'm gonna hit my head to a wall. I'm like, why can't the person go to the gym and do upper body work, upper body, like not lower body, if they have their ankle sprained? Yeah, they can't put pressure on it. They can sit on a bench, that's okay. Are they gonna sit in the bed for 2 weeks? No. They gotta pay for rent and food and kids and stuff. Like, why do we treat people like they're snowflakes? Because they're not. And after that, the worst thing is that the same person is going to associate the body part that was injured with a weakness, and it's going to stick there for 10 years, for 15 years. And the more that you go back related, the worse it gets.
Yeah.
Because people are afraid to bend over now. Oh no, I can't pick up my kid. Why? Because I got a hernia. Oh, you know? Yeah. And it's the more that I meet with it and the more that I see. And I get it, because from the people that actually are subject to it, I understand their fear, because usually it's pain related, it's very emotional, they don't know about it, it's easy to fall in that direction, so to say. But for the doctors, like, you actually go to school for 7 years, like, just open up the...
Yeah, I'm not trying to give props to myself or something, but counter doctors and so on. I think first people think exercise is a luxury, I think. And obviously, if you can avoid it to obviously avoid pain. On the other hand, it's very difficult to talk about injuries or to understand it if you've never had it.
Yep.
I cannot explain you how it is, but it's just another level of feeling, okay? You can read all you want about it. Scars have a way of teaching you things. If you dealt with a knee injury or a shoulder injury, someone comes to you, first of all, you're so fast to identify it by seeing them. You can just feel it. I cannot explain it. You combine a prior injury. I'm not saying go injure yourself so you can become a better doctor. No. But this biological knowledge that you get from having the thing itself, that's why now in the market, especially in terms of athletic performance, the best people dealing with Achilles injuries, patella injuries, so on and so forth, the people that are on the forefront had the injury in the first place. They sought after other doctors trying to understand the mechanism, why it happened, and they add their input over it. And then they have this amazing body of knowledge that they can help. And the first thing they would tell you, never stop exercising.
Put that on a wall. It's as easy as that. And it, like, even the simplest explanation, it's, you know, the Voltaren, the thing that you put on yourself and it makes the area go hot. And I'd ask most people, okay, why do we do that? Because it gets the area hot. Okay, what does that do? It gets more blood in, okay, because it gets red. What does that do? It gets more nutrients in. And what does that do? What does that do? It's actually how the injury is getting healed. So, if you sit in a bed and don't move, how much blood do you need that your body needs to get to that area? As minimal as possible. And that's basically all that you need to understand. And I get, for me, it's hard to empathize. And I'm not trying to, because I know that I'm not there, so I won't be able to emotionally do it. But I'm just trying to learn to communicate as efficient as possible to people that maybe come from another background than me.
Yeah. You know, I want to dive back a little bit or to the side. But moving and so on, another misconception. Mm-hmm. You know, growing up, I heard when I decided to lift, I need to extend my leg. When I decided to lift at a younger age, you know what you hear. Don't do it. You won't grow taller. You will stagnate. You will never be the same. Funny enough, it's not the case at all. It actually helps. If you have low vitamin D and low calcium combined with the status of phosphorus, that can actually slow your growth, especially for kids.
Okay.
Because cartilage inside of the bone is what helps bone elongate. Mm-hmm. And if you suffer from some sort of a calcification due to low vitamin D, because vitamin D helps calcium being absorbed, so it does a job. If you fail to accomplish that due to low vitamin D, kids can actually stop growing if they acquire that calcification. So at a certain point, lifting for kids will definitely help, if done, of course, safely and properly. And paying attention to what the kid is eating.
Even more.
Exactly. You know, circling back to how important is training, nutrition, and so on. So these are things people can pay attention to before saying you shouldn't lift or you shouldn't use resistance training.
And that's the whole, because I was even thinking about it like the last few days. Because, of course, I didn't get as injured, for example, as experience-wise, and it was a very good framing for you. Like, it's very hard to explain it until you actually go through it. But even, for example, the hamstring, the pull that I had, the knee thing that I had, and that was all... Okay, I'm not going to say that all, but it all got triggered by me running. And I somehow assumed that that's going to happen sooner or later. And it's a good thing because, okay, is it a good thing in the moment? No. But then I start to actually think of it a bit more correct, I'd say. Because now, what do I do before I go out running? And Seba is going to make fun of me, but I'm stretching and I'm foam rolling. Is it working? I don't know. Does anything hurt? No. So I keep doing it and it feels a bit better. So as those kind of things, which, you know, like scientifically, could you go past them? Of course, because that's what the literature says. But if you go hands-on and actually do it, and let's say, cause for example, I run at 10 in the evening. After a whole day of maybe working out, sitting, not sitting, actually walking a lot, I'm pretty tired, basically. Like, could that actually help me a bit more? Maybe. I don't know. I literally don't know. But I'm going to use this analogy and the idea that, as you said, we need to expose ourselves, actually get a bit rusty and actually maybe injure yourself as little as possible, but just go for it. Because if you don't do it, I don't think that you actually have the reason or the information to back up any decision that or any advice that you give to somebody else. Because yeah, everybody can go read stuff, but it's not only about reading information, it's about applying it.
Especially psychologically, you know how much it messes up with you mentally when you have something that is not going right. Yeah. And it, at least through my experience and seeing it happening, when something is defected, you kind of want to prove yourself that it's still functioning.
Yeah.
Like, my knee hurts. I need to do more knee stuff to prove myself that it's fine when you know it's not.
First thing when I pulled my hamstring, I was like, I'm going to try. And I had like 2.5 more kilometers until the gym. And I was like, I'm going to try running back to the gym and it's going to probably feel better.
Yeah.
I figured that it's not like 100 meters.
Yeah. That we all have this. We have a disassociated way of thinking. You have the coach when you are with when you are with yourself. You're pretty much like everybody else, you know? You probably have the same amount of ego, the same amount of drivenness, the same amount of being irrational, you know? It's like the coach should say, if X happened, stop, do something else. But the person didn't do it. So, yeah. Do you want to say something else?
No, that was it for me, yeah.
Okay.
It's just the fact that, and I grabbed this perspective from Killian, basically, Hamilton, my coach, the fact that just, as you said, like exposing yourself, taking something that you suck at, getting better at it, and even better, competing at the lowest level possible, like a family run that's organized by Kaufland or something, you know?
Yeah.
No consequences. No big prize, just but having the deadline, having the process in which you need to get ready, and the fact that it's very the levels are very clear, the fact that it's gonna happen, and it's very easy to learn the thing. And that's how basically I'm getting into a triathlon. I still don't know how that's gonna work. Also, are 3 to 4 months enough for me to learn to swim without dying in a lake? Like, am I good or should I?
I mean, the first prerequisite is not to sink.
Yeah, I just want to go alive through it. And okay, like I can swim, or swim is not well framed. I can make myself not die in water, but I can't really swim, because after I swim 200 or 300 meters, I feel very tired. I can feel that something is not going well. Because you have experience with swimming,
knowing you, it's my experience is not that relevant, because when I was probably 3 years old, my grandpa just threw me somewhere and was like, swim. And I would be looking. So that's almost like a second nature for me.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot. My experience is not relatable to yours.
Okay.
But knowing you, thinking I should learn how to swim won't be maybe relevant for you. But if you think about it, I'm competing in swimming.
Okay.
And I will treat swimming as a lift, as a skill, dissect it and follow it. I think you have high chances of succeeding. Yeah. Rather than I need to learn how to swim. You know?
Okay.
Like, that's very broad. You're very specific with your things. So deconstructing, okay, I need first of all to just spend time in the water, and then I'll try to strike, and then I'll try to do X, Y, and Z. I think that will help, because you'll be measuring your progress, and once you get some, you'll go after the other, and boom, suddenly you're swimming and doing your thing.
Okay, okay. Also, why do swimmers wear? Because you can wear, like, you know, the shorts, mm-hmm. but you can wear, like, the swim trunks. What? Why do people wear, like, swim trunks? Like, because you're more fluid for the water, or what's the...
I think by now it's... and I'm not a professional swimmer, but I remember... I don't remember the Olympic year, but Speedo created a suit that mimics the somehow fluidity or aerodynamic of a fish. And they started breaking records left and right.
Yeah.
And they had to ban it. Now you cannot wear it anymore.
Where do I buy it? Where do I buy it? Black market?
So. Yeah. So I think going for the trunks, or I think it's more like a personal preference rather than a skill or a decision to be made.
Okay. So to wrap it up, because we both need to get to the gym after that.
Yeah.
What's an exercise that when you see somebody doing in the gym, but especially like with a personal trainer or something, and they're like, that's a no, like just to a very direct answer for people to go with something home and to be like, okay, that's something that if I see, that's a red flag. You go, I'll go, and we'll end it here.
You try to make me hate on someone, right?
Or maybe the other way. You can go, I'll hate, and you go the other way. If you see somebody do that with a client, you're like, creme brulee of the industry.
There are exercises that now, I think females tend to be the victim of such things much more than men. Because as a man, how wrong can you do it? You know, it's like, you want to pick the heaviest dumbbells, the biggest bar, you know. But females tend to be, it's not their mistake. It's, I don't know, usually somebody else's mistake, because they see a person that looks a certain way. They want to do the same thing. Social media didn't help either. Sensation is undeniable. But using Smith machine in various ways, and especially a leg press on the machine, like a horizontal on the machine, the sheer danger of it first is to be considered, okay? Because I'm not saying the person that does it has no common sense, but if you pause a little bit and think about it, you can see you can do the same thing on a better implement. You have more surface to put your feet on.
Less chances to die.
Exactly, you know. So that's something that is somehow dangerous. And when I see it, that it scares me a little bit.
Okay, so that's going to be your pick.
That's going to be my pick. What's yours?
So mine is a bit more like contextual, but I started like really hating when people prescribe, you know, the sumo squats, like with the dumbbell held in here, like in between the legs.
Because that's gaining a lot of traction nowadays.
I feel that's the choice of the lazy trainer. You can use it, like if you use it properly. Let's say that you did your whole workout, I don't know, like it's somewhere in the end, you already can't get as much weight as you could in the start of the workout, and you want to work, I don't know, on that hinging variation of a squat. If you got like a good argument, I get it. But when I see it used just to somehow perform a squat, and a heavier squat, because who can't grab a dumbbell and somehow hinge back? For me, it's like, that's the lazy choice. Like, that's the I don't wanna, or I don't know how to, but I don't wanna go through the goblet to something of a front squat, to something of a back squat, to okay, now we are actually hinging in a squat because it's more of a low bar or something. You don't have to do that. Like, that's not the way to do it or something. But for somebody that doesn't want to go from page 1 to page 10, what do? You grab the dumbbell and you do that.
Yeah. And just so we show people how strong our relationship is, I'm gonna disagree with him.
Okay.
You know. Is it the best exercise? No, but I don't see it as this ridiculous.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not. You know? But for me, it's like, I probably don't want to be friends with the person that prescribes it. Or at least if I explain it to her or him, my reasoning, and they don't seem to get it at all, I'm like, nah, we're not friends.
And by the way, to elaborate on the exercise that I picked, it's literally a person picking a Smith machine, that movable, stable bar, and sit, let's say, put your back on the floor, then your legs on the actual bar.
Yeah, the legs are on like...
First of all, it's so hard to just... It's very hard to unrack it with your hands, let alone basically with your feet.
Help. You need exactly. help, yeah.
So you have this thin bar on the whole foot that can slip at any time, just fall on you, especially if you don't put the security thing. So that's the exercise, in case people didn't know which one.
Yeah, we're going to put a video of it on anyway.
Oh, okay, that's pretty cool.
That's good. So yeah, that's mine is more like an ideological
thing. Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, I used to be that guy. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, hopefully I don't. I almost said hopefully I don't change, but like hopefully I change, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. We had a good run, okay? Yeah. People will see you here again, like that's for sure. You can remember them, where can they find you? So if somebody wants to, I don't know, reach out for anything, training, nutrition advice, collaborations, just leave them a path to follow.
I would say I'm not very active on anything, only active because he makes me be active. And you know what? Maybe I'll try to be more active this year. You know, people say new year, new whatever. Okay, I don't promise, but I'll try to do my best. But usually Instagram, the fitness practitioner, or check Marius and look for a picture or image of me. Yeah, somehow you find me there.
Thanks for coming. We'll have you back. And good conversation. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Mulțumim pentru vizionare. Sper că ați învățat ceva. Nu uitați, aplicați orice învățați aici, pentru că asta contează cel mai mult. Și ne vedem în următorul episod. Dar până atunci, un like, share, subscribe. Ne vedem în următorul.